beat reporter for the Pittsburgh Penguins, a team that is going to have some new faces this season. He writes at The Athletic. Josh Yowie joins us. Josh, how you doing?
Well, I'll have you guys know that I selected Antonio Brown in the third round of my fantasy draft. And I knew I was taking a chance. I used to cover him. I know he's kind of a ticking time bomb, but I thought it was a good deal in the third round to take a shot at him, but I'm getting a little nervous now.
Before we get to the Penguins, quickly, newest member of the Edmonton Order signed a one-year contract extension today was Riley Sheehan. And when he came to the Penguins, he was acquired early in the 2017-18 season. He had 32 points in 73 games for them and then had seven goals in 49 games before being traded to Florida. In the year and a half, what should Order fans expect from Sheehan based on what you've seen? Or Sheehan, excuse me.
Well, the pros with him, the first thing with him, I would say, he's a really good defensive player. He's a guy who Mike Sullivan really trusted, even in the playoffs, late in games. If you're up a goal with 30 seconds left in a faceoff in your own zone, he's a guy you can put out there. He can win you faceoffs. You can put him at the wing as well. Just a really reliable player, a pretty good penalty killer. But he's also the kind of guy who always leaves you wanting more. As you watch him play, he's a big guy. He can skate. You wonder why he doesn't score more. He had the year in Detroit where I don't think he scored a goal all season until he scored the final two goals in Joe Louis Arena in the 82nd game of the year. Very streaky scorer. So I wouldn't expect a whole lot of offense from him. But if you plug him in on the third or fourth line, he's not going to hurt you. He can certainly help your penalty killing unit. But he's just frustrating because he's got talent, but for whatever reason, he just doesn't finish very much at all.
Let's take a look at the Penguins and some significant changes. And then with moving out Phil Kessel, that was that something that had been on the horizon for a while? And was it just a money thing or a fresh start thing? Where did that come from?
Well, I think Phil had been driving Mike Sullivan nuts for quite some time. And, Phil comes with an expiration date wherever he has been. Even if he wins championships, as he certainly helped the Penguins do on two occasions. I just think the coaching staff had had enough, and I don't think Phil was very happy in Pittsburgh anymore. He and Mike Sullivan never saw eye to eye. There was always a sense of frustration between those two, and it was explored the summer before, and it finally happened this year. Listen, Phil's going to produce, but I do think there was a sense in the Penguins organization that Phil had probably lost a quarter of a step. And he'll be 32, I believe, in October, and he's still just a magician on the power play. He'll put up his numbers. But he went 2 months from January 30th to April 2nd without scoring a 5-on-5 goal, and that really bothered the Penguins, and they felt like 5-on-5, he's not quite the player that he once was, and he was playing with Evgeny Malkin in most of that stretch. It's not like he didn't have a center to play with, and he just couldn't score. And so I would suggest he's maybe not quite the player he was 3 or 4 years ago, but that said, he'll still put up his numbers to some extent like he always has.
The one thing that, it was about Phil Kessel that maybe gets overlooked, and obviously you got Crosby and Malkin, they're exceptional players. Connor McDavid told me he feels Kessel's the best half-wall guy in the NHL. And the Penguins' power play has been really good. You've still got Crosby and Malkin, obviously, but you take off Kessel. That's a pretty big loss. Who do you see filling in, and specifically in that spot?
Well, coming from Connor McDavid, that's pretty high praise. He's not so bad on the half wall himself. But he raises a point because as great as Crosby and Malkin are and as great as they can be on the power play, the Penguins' power play absolutely ran through Phil Kessel. He was the conductor of that power play. He really was. And for all of Crosby's greatness, he's not a great half-wall guy. He's a very good one. He's not Lemieux or Gretzky on the half-wall. He's just not. I actually think Malkin is better on the half-wall than Crosby. But Kessel is great at it. That's one of the big questions going into camp. The Penguins don't have many right-handed forwards so they can put over there. They don't really have anyone. So if they're going to have a right-handed player over there on the left-wing wall, probably going to be Chris Letang. The only thing they could do is let Justin Schultz run the power play from the point and put Letang over there. He has played there in the past. He can do it. I don't know that it's a good idea, and they're going to have to find a way to get Jake Guentzel on the power play. That's one thing a lot of people don't realize.
Yeah.
Jeff Gensel scored 40 goals last year, and he wasn't on the top power play unit, which is incredible. Tells you how good he is, but they need to get him on the ice on the power play. So they're going to have a lot of left-handed skaters. So to answer your question, I don't know what they're going to do, but it's going to be Crosby and Malkin and Gensel, and neither one of them is going to be all that effective on the left-wing wall because they're all left-handed. So it's an issue for Mike Sullivan and Mark Recchi, who runs the power play.
Breaking down the Pittsburgh Penguins offseason with Josh Owey, the Athletics Penguins reporter. Galchenyuk, he now comes in, and, you know, obviously he's had mixed reviews so far in the NHL. Why him? Why is he the guy that can, or why are they the team that can turn him into what many people hope he can be, which is a dynamic scorer?
Well, you know, Galchenyuk, he certainly does have some physical tools. I don't think anyone would question that. And one thing about him, you know, he's played his entire career in Phoenix and in Montreal during times when those teams didn't have a lot of, you know, great offensive players to put him with. And, you know, I think the thinking on him is he's not a great player, but if you put him with great players, he might be able to really produce. And he's going to start the season on Evgeny Malkin's line. There's no question about that. You'll see Crosby with Jake Gensel on the top line and probably Brian Rust, I would guess, or Jared McCann. And on the second line, you're going to see Evgeny Malkin and Alex Galchenyuk together. And the Penguins feel like he is a really gifted finisher. And if you put him with Malkin, he's going to score 25 to 30 goals. We'll see. I know they got a pretty good scouting report on him. Remember, his coach in Arizona was Rick Tocchet. And Rick Tocchet and Mike Sullivan are really close. And I know for a fact they talk about Alex Galchenyuk. And I know that Tocchet really likes him, and he thinks he can thrive playing in the Penguins system. So we'll see. It's not... You know, I look at Galchenyuk, I don't think he's been a bust, but I don't think he has necessarily had the career that many expected. When you're drafted third overall, you should be a more dominant player than he has been. But, you know, the Penguins have always had that advantage of having Crosby and Malkin, and, you know, much like Connor McDavid in Edmonton, they can elevate players beside them. They have a history of it, and if a guy has talent, that's all the better. And if Evgeny Malkin can play with any style of player, he has played with power forwards, with East-West guys, you name it. He can mesh with anyone, and they feel like those two could be a really good match.
Josh Owey joins us, a beat reporter for the Pittsburgh Penguins, writes at The Athletic. One interesting offseason signing was Brandon Tanev, a six-year deal at $3.5 million per season for a guy who would, you know what, he's, a, I guess, a 14-goal scorer, if we want to call him that. A lot of people think, hey, you know, when he gets into Pittsburgh, he'll get a lot more opportunities. Is he going to get top six opportunities in Pittsburgh?
Well, that kind of money for Brandon Tanev makes me wish I could go back in time and try to be a hockey player when I was a kid. I don't think he's going to get top 6 minutes. I think he'll get a look here and there, sure. But that's not the plan for him. He's going to be on the third or fourth line, and they're going to give him a ton of penalty-killing minutes. They, you know, Jim Rutherford told me on July 1st he didn't really want to give him 6 years or $3.5 million a year, but on July 1st sometimes you have to overpay for people, and that's what they were willing to do. They really liked him, and they feel like their bottom six was not good enough last year, and it wasn't. You know, the last couple of years, really, in the post-Stanley Cup years for the Penguins, if Crosby's line or Malkin's line are not scoring, they're just not generating any offense. They're not carrying possession at all in five-on-five play. Gone are the days of the HBK line when you had Nick Bonino and Phil Kessel and Carl Hagelin on your third line.
Yeah.
This is a guy they think can score 10 to 15 goals and be a great penalty killer, and that's all they're going to ask of him. And if they overpaid for him, and they know they kind of did, they're okay with that because they need a couple of guys who can perform at that level in their bottom six, and they've really liked him for a long time. Jim Rutherford has talked for a couple of years about just what a really good bottom six player he thinks Tanev is. So we'll see how he fits.
How do Erica Branson and Jack Johnson fit into their plans of both this year and long term?
Well, funny you should ask. Jack Johnson, speaking of bad contracts, he's got 4 years left, 3.25 a year. He did not have a good year in Pittsburgh. Boy, the good people on social media just want him out of town like you wouldn't believe. You know, here's the problem. Jack's going to be on the team because they can't trade him. And Eric Gudbranson makes $4 million a year, which is too much for him. Oh, I will say this. Gudbranson was a disaster in Vancouver. He actually played really well in Pittsburgh. It was a small sample size for a couple of months. But if you look at the analytics, the eye test, he was really good in Pittsburgh. He and Marcus Pedersen were on the third pairing, and boy, were they good. Here's the problem. The Penguins want Marcus Pedersen to play on the second pairing this year with Justin Schultz because Jack Johnson on the second pairing is just not something they want any longer. It really affects Malkin as well. It's on the ice with him a lot. So that, in turn, makes your third pairing Jack Johnson and Eric Branson. And that sounds like trouble to me. Not only is it a very expensive third pairing, it's more than $7 million a year, but it's two guys who don't move all that well who I could certainly see struggling together. So if you're looking for an issue with the Penguins lineup, depth on the blue line, especially that third pairing, is a pretty good place to start.
What? Why do they like those two? Like, I can understand maybe having one, maybe, but having both of them, it's somewhat of a head-scratcher.
Well, you know, they acquired Gudbranson. It was one of those bad contract. They wanted to get rid of Tanner Pearson because he just wasn't fitting in, and his contract was bad, and that's really all it was. Johnson is the more interesting one, and, you know, part of it goes back to Sidney Crosby. They're very close friends. They always have been. I don't know that Crosby necessarily put pressure on the front office to sign him, but I know for a fact they went to him and said, do you think we should sign Jack? And he was very much gave his approval. And so when you consider that and also the fact that Jim Rutherford drafted him 15 years ago in Raleigh and just has an affection for him, it was kind of personal, I think. You know, I think we all know what's happened with Jack and his finances. I think there was a part of Jim Rutherford that literally just wanted to take care of him for life and gave him way too much money in 6 years, which was absolutely ludicrous. You know, they were bidding against themselves for 5 years. I mean, they were bidding against themselves. They could have gotten Jack Johnson for 2 years and $6 million probably. Mm-hmm. So maybe the hearts were used a little more than the heads in this case, I have a feeling, because his play has been on the decline for a few years, and he wasn't very good last year. He is not a good skater. Maybe he was in, you know, 2007, but the way the game is played now, he really stuck out for his lack of mobility, and he's 32 years old. I don't think he's going to improve at this stage.
Josh, it's always great to catch up with you. Hopefully you've got a deep bench for your receivers in fantasy football without Antonio Brown. And if not, the waiver wire can be your friend next week.
Hey, we got Sammy Watkins ready to fill in. Team Yoey's going to be all right, but I appreciate it.
Thanks, Josh.